I'm Duarte Geraldino, Deputy Managing Business Editor for Al Jazeera Digital. I'm in for Tenzina Vega, and you are listening to The Takeaway.
The city center looks like a demilitarized zone, and that's an unreal sight if I ever saw one.
This week, Italy became the first country to put in place a nationwide lockdown. The novel coronavirus keeps spreading there and across the globe. The virus has already killed more than 600 people in Italy, and the numbers are growing. Right now, roughly 10,000 people there are infected. Italian Prime Minister Giuseppe Conte ordered the country's 60 million people to stay home. He's also said, quote, "We are forced to impose sacrifices."
Scuole di ballo, sale giochi, sale scommesse, sale bingo, discoteche. Noi quindi non possiamo più permetterci in queste aree aggregazioni di persone.
Conte is calling this Italy's darkest hour. He was borrowing a phrase from Winston Churchill during World War II, which was the last time restrictions of movement at this scale were imposed in Europe. COVID-19 is changing how we live. Already, lockdowns on a much smaller scale are popping up around the world. In China, where the outbreak first began, the government locked down specific cities and provinces, but not the whole country. This week, New York is creating what it calls, quote, "a containment area in New Rochelle." A growing number of infected people live in that New York City suburb. Back in Italy, very few people leave their homes these days.
Florence as a whole, just like the rest of the country, has had to face a dramatic and very sudden increase in the level of perceived danger.
Giovanni Elia lives in Florence, Italy, on lockdown.
Some of my clients have put their businesses in stasis, so to speak, and therefore the amount of work that they have has gone down markedly. On a personal level, I have some elder relatives, first of all my parents, and I've been trying to help them out in any way I can when it comes to their daily needs, so that they have to go out as little as possible. There are definitely a lot less people in public.
Let's make sense of that sight. Rachel Donadio is a contributing writer for The Atlantic. She covers politics and culture across Europe. Also with us is a reporter based in Rome. Crispian Balmer is chief Italy correspondent for Reuters. Crispian, Rachel, hello.
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 So, Crispian, what exactly does the lockdown entail, and how do you enforce something like that?
The Italian government has said that all non-essential travel is banned. So people can go to work, but they'd prefer people to work from home if possible. Can't move from region to region unless you carry a certificate that you yourself have printed from home that gives a reason for the movement. Flights abroad, you've got to again have an emergency or health reason to undertake longer journeys. So far, the Italian government is relying upon civic duty. It's been sending messages around saying the country faces a crisis like we haven't seen in generations, and you need to play your part. It remains to be seen whether that can continue for the next 3 weeks.
You mentioned these certificates that you print from home. I'm assuming from an online source. How do we know that these certificates are not forged? Is there anyone who actually approves this? And are there penalties for people who actually break the quarantine?
The government says that if the police stop you and check your certificate, check what your story, then they can follow that up at a later date. And if it's proved that you aren't going to a place of work, if your company is saying, no, that's not true, then you face possible fines and even jail time. I think they're talking up to 3 months in jail.
And speaking of jail, we understand that there have been some riots in prisons. What's the latest on that?
I think 12 people have died in these riots. All of them, I believe, came when inmates broke into a health facility at one prison in Modena in the north and basically overdosed on what they found there. Just seems to be mass overdosing. But the rioting was widespread in 25 prisons across the country, and it seems to be being sparked by restrictions imposed by the authorities because of coronavirus. And Italian prisons are incredibly overcrowded, I think something like 120-130% beyond their expected capacity. So there's fear there as well that if coronavirus enters the prisons, it could rip through them incredibly quickly.
Rachel, why did the Italian government think that a nationwide lockdown was necessary? What's the logic there?
The logic is that this is a highly contagious disease. Some people have very few symptoms, and other people need emergency respiration in the ICU, and it's overwhelming the intensive care units at hospitals. In the area of Bergamo, which is kind of like the Greenwich, Connecticut of Italy, it's a rich bedroom community of Milan, and the hospitals there are overwhelmed, and the number of deaths are going up, and really, this is a infectious disease, and there's no cure for it.
Were you surprised that it got to this point, Rachel?
Yes. I mean, on February 27th, the head of the center-left Democratic Party went to Milan to show solidarity and drink an aperitivo and say, Milan doesn't stop. Everything is fine. And he, on Saturday, announced he had come down with the virus. And it went so quickly from, oh, it's kind of life is normal and there's a small quarantine area in these towns outside Milan, to an entire Western European democratic country is on lockdown. Now, as Crispian said, it's not martial law. The police are not going door to door to make sure that everyone is staying home. And you can still circulate and go to grocery stores and move around if you have to. But it is a really, really strong deterrent measure just to say we really need to shut down in order to prevent the flow of this virus. I did not expect it to go so fast, and I did not expect it to be so extreme so quickly.
So, Rachel, that begs a question. Are we likely to see more lockdowns, say, in France, in Germany? Because, as you say, this is spreading around the world, and everyone's likely to get it?
I mean, I think that every country is responding differently to this. I think there's been a lot of denial, and European countries are waking up to it. I think France is still downplaying it. It says, oh, if President Macron has said if we need to go to level 3, which means, you know, closing of public events, then we will. But it hasn't gotten there yet. In Germany, they announced in Berlin that theaters and museums would be closed until a certain point in April. So it's slowly starting. I don't know if we'll see anything as widespread as the lockdown in Italy. I think that each country is kind of trying to evaluate balancing lives and livelihoods, because this is wreaking devastating havoc on economies, obviously, but so would a high death count.
So, Crispian, there's a lot of talk that this virus is an import to a lot of countries around the world. In Europe, we've seen a rise in far-right political extremism, particularly in Italy. Is this playing out among groups right now in the shadow of the coronavirus?
I don't see it. I think there's a lot of confusion amongst the far right as to how to respond to this problem. And Salvini, who's the head of the League, was saying a couple of weeks ago, everything's got to reopen. This is ridiculous. But the borders should shut to stop the virus coming in. Now he's saying everything must close, but he's being outraged because the borders have shut to prevent the Italians getting out. So there's a bit of a mixed message, a bit of confusion about this. But that said, I mean, I think when this settles down, you know, this is a problem that perhaps comes from globalization. It spread around the globe incredibly quickly. And I think there will be more calls to bring more production back, bring the focus of the industry, the economy, back to individual countries to try to protect them from the outside world. But I think right now, all the attention really is on tackling the initial emergency.
Rachel, the demographics of Italy are fairly unique in the world. It has one of the highest concentrations of older people. How much is the death rate, if at all, linked to Italy's elderly population?
The majority of the deaths from COVID-19 in Italy are of people over the age of 70, and they're mostly, those have been in the Lombardy region. I think that that is definitely a factor in why the death rate has been so high in Italy. It has affected older people, and those older people haven't pulled through. But I also think it's going to be a question of intensive care unit capacity and whether they can handle that. There's a lot of speculation now about why things went so fast in Italy and why the death rate's so high. I do think the fact that Italy has the oldest population in the world after Japan is a factor, but it's not the only factor.
Crispian, how are people reacting to the lockdown in Rome?
I think that there's been, from my point of view, almost surprising support. It was an opinion poll I saw this morning that said more than 80% of people, even 86% of people, supported the government action. And something like 75% said that they thought that, you know, even further restrictions would be necessary and they would back them. I think that the small businesses restaurant owners, bar owners, they are deeply worried because they fear that they will go out of business. They've got to pay rent, they've got to pay staff, they've got to pay utility bills, and there's just nobody around. I mean, all restaurants and bars have to shut at 6 p.m. all over the country. And, you know, Italy has got 150,000 plus bars and goodness knows how many restaurants. So a lot of people are facing really serious economic hardship, and that is frightening for them. But globally, you know, the streets here, Rome, Italians have got a reputation for being, you know, they don't really respect the rules. They don't really, you know, queuing isn't something that comes naturally to them. But, you know, if you go outside a pharmacy or a supermarket, I've seen this morning people queuing respectfully with a 1 meter distance but between them. They seem to have taken this on board.
So what lessons can the U.S. and other Western countries, for that matter, learn from how Italy is handling this outbreak?
Don't downplay, wash your hands, take this seriously. It's worse than the flu.
Yeah, I was thinking it's very interesting. I think there are two kind of philosophies. In Britain, the message seems to be keep calm and carry on, the kind of the old World War II message, whereas in Italy, it's keep calm and stop. And I think, you know, we will soon find out which of those two messages is the better. But certainly don't underestimate it. The images from the Italian intensive care units are very sobering. And I was struck, the patient number one was a 38-year-old, incredibly fit young man, an athlete. He came down, he went to hospital on something like the 19th of February. They announced yesterday that he was finally off the ventilator, that he could breathe by himself. So, you know, this is something that lingers, it's something that's highly infectious, and it's something that you really, really shouldn't underestimate.
Crispian Balmer is chief Italy correspondent for Reuters, and Rachel Donadio is a contributing writer to The Atlantic, covering politics and culture across Europe. Thank you both for joining us.
Thank you.
There's a lot going on right now. Mounting economic inequality, threats to democracy, environmental disaster, the sour stench of chaos in the air. I'm Brooke Gladstone, host of WNYC's On the Media. Want to understand the reasons and the meanings of the narratives that led us here, and maybe how to head them off at the pass? That's On the Media's specialty. Take a listen wherever you get your podcasts.